for 2A, we found space of closed string states. So we're not going to, we're only going to consider them coming from strings with the kind of local contribution instead of from strings which wind around a circle. We ignore the winding modes for now. There's contribution from forms in R2, then another contribution from polyvector fields in C4. So let me remind you what polyvector fields were. This is functions on C4 with coefficients in and we join these odd variables. And it's equipped with the debar operator. On to, to be totally precise, where we really want to consider states which are invariant under an operation of circle rotation. So we wanted states which are in the kernel of the operator some d by dzi d by d del zi. So these guys, we're treating del zi as an odd variable. You could call it epsilon I if it made you more comfortable. So this is a derivative with respect to this fermionic variable. It just removes one of them. This is an ordinary derivative. So this is an odd operator acting on this vector space. And for type 2b, the closed string states kernel of del inside polyvector fields and C5. Now, since the differential on everything is the d bar operator, we can say something like BRST differential or linearized BRST differential. We can also, if we want, pass to d bar cohomology without really losing anything. So we'll mostly consider things which are in the kernel of the D bar. So that means we have holomorphic functions here, and we get rid of these DZ bars as they disappear once we take total cohomology. And I'll just say that holomorphic functions are the same as polynomials. So we just get some polynomial algebra with two sets of variables, one even and one odd. So there's lots of things. This is on the right place. Yeah.
Is there an additional term, the differential in the 2A kind of corresponding to the A-type derivative?
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right. So the D bar operator on C4 plus the deram operator on OR2. Sorry about that. No, the del guy doesn't have anything over there. Because if you remember, I mean, you remember this guy was coming from circle rotation on the string world sheet. So we had this discussion last time about how in the A model direction, the closed string states were this space called symplectic cohomology. But here we're making the approximation. I mean, symplectic cohomology is some kind of Fleur cohomology of the loop space. Here we're making the approximation, which is valid in this case, by considering only those loops near the constant loops, in which case symplectic cohomology reduces to ordinary cohomology. And because they're constant loops, the circle action doesn't do anything. So what I wanted to discuss today was, I mean, there's lots of things we need to discuss because there's the whole kind of string theory package to understand. You know, we'd like to, in the usual picture of string theory, we can identify various fields with other Ramon-Ramon fields, which are forms of certain degrees, and the D brains are charged under the Ramon-Ramon fields in particular ways. And we can try and derive all of that. So I'd like to get into some of that at some stage. But the first thing I'd like to understand is how does supersymmetry act on everything? I'll mostly focus on 2B. So in type 2B, there are 32 supersymmetries. And then we expect that the Q cohomology or Q is the supersymmetry we're using to twist. The supersymmetry algebra will act on closed string states. So I'd like to describe that action. But we can even do it a little better because these closed string states should be the states, they should be the fields of supergravity. And in supergravity, we gauge this local supersymmetries. So part of the field content of supergravity is the supersymmetry algebra. So we'd actually expect this supersymmetry algebra to live inside this vector space. So better, we expect that the Q cohomology of the supersymmetry algebra will live inside polyvector fields on C5. So if we want to make a statement like this, the supersymmetry algebra is a Lie algebra, a Zeno 2-graded Lie algebra. So for this to be a reasonable statement, we'd also like this to be a Lie algebra too. So it has a standard Lie bracket, called it the Schutten bracket. So we'll so del zi, zj is equal to delta ij, and that this expression is extended to polynomials in these variables by the Leibniz rule. So we expect to find that the supersymmetry algebra lives inside this guy with this bracket. So the supersymmetry algebra will be inside polyvector fields with this bracket. Okay, any questions, or is this? Yeah, I mean, people who like topological strings and E2 algebras will know how this arises from the E2 structure and the world sheet and like convince themselves that that's the right thing. But I don't want to get into that. So I guess so we'll be able to write this down in a minute. So all you have to do first is just do a little bit of algebra to figure out what is the Q cohomology of the supersymmetry algebra. This calculation, you can really get into it because you have to be really careful about the various extensions of the supersymmetry algebra. There's extensions of the supersymmetry algebra corresponding to all the different brains, and you can see them in different. It gets really fun and a bit involved. So maybe just do the simplest version of this story. What is the supersymmetry algebra? So let's write R10 tensored over R with C as V plus B star, where V is a representation of SL5. So the complexification, SL5 is inside of SO10C, and the fundamental representation of SO10C decomposes in this way. The spin representation of spin 10C decomposes as an SL5 C representation phi S plus. So there's a trivial representation plus a copy of wedge 2V plus a copy of wedge 4V. The wedge 4V is the same as V star because the determinant is trivialized. So this is of dimension 1, 10, this is of dimension 5, so the total dimension is 16. And all I've done here is just use the standard facts about Clifford algebras that the chiral part of a spin representation in even dimensions can be obtained by taking the vector representation, decomposing it into two, building a Clifford algebra, and you get a Clifford module from the exterior algebra in 1/2. So this usual story. So as an SL5 representation, so the spinners, the 32 spinners of type 2B, what they look like is two copies of this. And our chosen supercharge is an element here, because it's SL5 invariant, so it's in one of the two copies. The vector representation is V plus V star. Okay, so what supersymmetries will survive? What we're interested in is taking the cohomology of this. But we should also include the rotations into our cohomology computation. So we should take the cohomology of the following complex, following Lie algebra, is what we're interested in. We have our spinners. And here we have the Lie algebra of SL10. This is what will survive twisting. Okay, is this plausible? Clear to everybody? So if I have a spinner which commutes with Q, then it will survive twisting. But those spinners which are just in the obtained from Q by hitting it with some element of SO10, they'll be cohomologically trivial, so they will not be interesting. So we have to compute this cohomology. So the first thing to do is to compute the kernel of Q. So we need to know what is the operation which takes a spinner to a vector, the operation given by bracketing with Q. Well, it's an SL5 invariant operation. There are no SL5 invariant maps from here to here or from here to here. So the only possibilities are these two pieces. And, well, you can arrange things so that bracketing with Q is an isomorphism from this piece to here and a zero on this piece. So bracketing with Q, wedge for V, star, we find that the kernel of Q, the kernel of bracketing with Q, is this big thing. Okay. Now, what's the image of rotations? Well, this is a direct sum of two representations, one representation in each row. We're never going to hit anything in this bottom row. The only thing we ever hit might be up here. And if you think for a minute about how SO10 acts on the spin representation, which is decomposed in this way, well, it acts by Clifford multiplication, by even elements, by degree 2 elements of the Clifford algebra. So it takes this guy, there are elements of SO10 which take this guy to here. So this piece is in the image of Q under rotation. So this guy will also go away. If you think a little bit more, there's also one more symmetry, some OR symmetry, which allows us to get rid of this guy. So the only pieces which survive are these things. So what we need to do is write down inside the polyvector fields some things which transform in the exterior square of the fundamental of SL5 and some things which are in this five-dimensional representation of SL5 and which have the correct commutation relations. So we need a copy of wedge 2 of V inside of polyvector fields in C5. V star, where the shoot and bracket between them should be the translations. Okay. Because the bracket in the supersymmetry algebra says the bracket of this guy with this guy is a translation in the ZI directions. And we want to reproduce that in the Schutten bracket of polyvector fields. So it turns out that there's an obvious answer to that. Let it end over here. So the answer is that wedge 2 of V gets sent to the bivectors, del z I, wedge del z j, and V star, which is the same as wedge 4 of V, gets sent to the linear functions Zi. And these do indeed satisfy the correct commutation relations because del Zi wedge del Zj with, if I take the shooting bracket with Zk, is the translation times delta Jk minus, so it's a linear combination of two translations, which is exactly. And this is exactly the relations in the supersymmetry algebra. Okay, any questions about this? So what this tells us is that we can understand, well, it tells us a number of things. For one thing, we can understand other twists of type 2b, or indeed type 2a. The other twists of type 2b are obtained by, we can make C5 non-commutative in some directions. Or do something a bit more mysterious, which is turn on a linear superpotential. Okay, so the next thing I want to explain is how is the link between these supersymmetries of type 2b and the supersymmetries on the brain? Yeah?
Is there a way to see that you expect to see the degrees of these guys kind of chromologically and how they match up?
Oh, that's a good
question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, at the moment, it's really everything's kind of. I think everything has to be Z-mod2 graded, because to start with,
So you're kind of thinking everything here is even.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I was thinking. Maybe there's more you can do, but I can't see it right now. Yeah, you might wonder how do you know this is the right thing? Somehow, what else could it be, really? Like, there's not, if you try to find these relations inside polyvector fields, you're not going to find any other solution. But I think the most convincing proof that this is the right thing is that if you analyze what this does to theories on the brain, it matches up with other calculations you can do for what happens when you twist a theory on the brain. So if we have a D2K minus 1 brain on CK instead of C5, well, the physical theory, this is a half BPS object. The physical theory. So it should preserve 16 supercharges. So in terms of this diagram, which I've mostly erased, in terms of the original 32 supercharges, it's not going to be obvious which 16 will be preserved by which brain. What you have to do is look at the 16-dimensional spin representation and think about how it decomposes under SO2K as a tensor product. And then you play around with that to see the kind of the correct representations appearing inside the 32 supercharges having the correct commutation relations. So I don't know a uniform formula. I just kind of know how to play with them and see in examples. So similarly, we'll find, like in the twisted theory, it's like we'll find it will. So can we see the Q cohomology of this, of these 16 supercharges? In the twisted theory,
some supercharges square the translation. So with all the supercharges that square the translation parallel to the brain, do it preserve?
No, because there are supercharges which square to zero, which do not preserve the brain. So. Okay. I mean, the equation, the condition you said about squaring to translation doesn't produce for you a linear space in the supercharges. It's a quadratic equation, so it's not going to be the right thing.
Is it half BPS for any k?
Yes, half BPS for any k. There's always 16 supercharges. They will just be a different set of 16 supercharges depending on which brain you're using. So if you have a D9 brain, it will just be one copy of S plus. If you have a D0 brain, it'll also be one copy of S plus, because those are the extreme cases which have an SO10 symmetry. For the ones in the middle, it's more complicated because you break the SO10 symmetry, so you break this representation into other representations and you take different pieces. So there's a rule for which, given a brain, and you look at these supercharges, where you get there's a rule to determine which supercharges preserve the brain. So we take CK inside of C5, we take coordinates WI and ZJ. And here's the rule. So theory, or say the brain is preserved by the ZJ and del WI YHD del ZJ, but not by the others. How do we realize this is a reasonable? I mean, we can realize kind of post hoc that if we calculate the Q cohomology of the supersymmetry algebra, in each case it is this. And this is a kind of a fun computation, and I might do the case for a D3 brain in a minute. But you could also just guess this rule by thinking about the topological string or topological field theory. For example, if I had some WI, some linear superpotential there, well, that's not going to work because if I have a superpotential, my brain better have something to do with the critical locus of that superpotential. So that's not going to work. Similarly, if I had a Poisson tensor with two legs on this copy of CK, that means that CK is non-commutative. Now, well, you know, a GLN gauge theory might have some non-commutative deformation, but the deformations coming from supersymmetries, they work for any Lie algebra. And there's no way, you know, an E8 gauge theory, I can't make that non-commutative because it just doesn't make any sense. So whatever the supersymmetries are, they can't really be anything to do with the Poisson tensors living there. Similarly for the Poisson tensors living on the orthogonal directions. You can kind of see that the only reasonable things that can possibly make sense for the theory on the brain are these guys. Well, I suppose the idea would be you just to do whatever you usually do with a topological B model with a superpotential. I must say I don't fully understand what this will do to the closed string sector because it's a linear superpotential and that's weird. Yes, it changes the differential on polyvector fields, and it turns polyvector fields naively into something with no cohomology. So it feels like it's something which only has non-perturbative contributions. So that's why I feel like I don't understand it. Okay, so you notice that these things commute only to give translations on the brain. Okay, that's fine. Yeah, minus a little WJ delta IK. So we find, like, how many supersymmetries are there that survive, that preserve the brain? From here, there's k times 5 minus k, and here there's 5 minus k. There. So here's an example. Yeah.
Does this kind of give like sort of a partial proof of the claim that the others don't preserve it? Like if you had something else, you could sort of produce a translation in a direction normal to the...
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so that's along the lines you were saying. That yeah, if you had a, like a W, then you could produce a ZJ. And if you had a Poisson tensor, well, it's because it's only it shows that you can exclude some of them by that reasoning. So you take a D3 ring. And let's compute to check. Look at the theory on the D3 brain, n equals 4 Yang mills, and compute the Q cohomology of the supersymmetry algebra, and find that it matches. So here we have n equals 4 supersymmetry. So there are 16 supercharges, which are in, this is the four-dimensional spin representation, which is of dimension 2. C plus W, where W is a three-dimensional space. And we take the supercharge is of the form is an element, say psi tensor 1 in S plus tensor C. So it lives there, this tensor product. This is why I've decomposed the space in this way. So what's the Q cohomology? We first think about what does bracketing with Q do? Well, in four dimensions, we take two spinners of opposite chirality, we can produce a vector. So bracketing with Q is something, so which pairs this guy, which is Q, with something on this side. And it's only involves this vector. So the kernel of Q is equal to and on the other hand, what do I get out of Q by rotations? Well, we can rotate. We rotate by an element of the Orr symmetry group. The Orr symmetry group is this SL4, which acts on this four-dimensional space I've called C plus W. And this is, of course, the same as SO6, or sorry, spin 6C, and which rotates the six normal directions of the brain in 10-dimensional space, one of the exceptional isomorphisms of Lie groups. Well, what do we do if we do that? If we look at this vector, of course, we're going to get psi times anything. Right? I'll get psi times any element of W. And similarly, if we rotate by SO4, we get this whole plate at the S plus tensor C. So as a result, the quotient So the kernel of Q modulo the image of rotation is S plus modulo psi tensor W plus S minus tensor W. So this is of dimension 6. Sorry, this is of dimension 3. And this is of dimension 6. And they match as representations, you know, as representations of SO4 times SL3, right? Once we've twisted, we've broken this SO4 down to SL2, and this spin 6 down to SL3. So we find that they match as representations of SL2 times SL3 with what we have over there. So these three guys correspond to the ZI, where this is the normal directions. And it's the vector representation of SL3, which rotates this space W. And these six guys correspond to del WI wedge del ZJ. Of course, this was a W star. That's my mistake. And these match. So it's a kind of fun exercise to, you know, go through every case and check that you find exactly the same thing. And you do, and you find the same representations. So there's another aspect of the theories on the brain that we discussed before, which is that we can write the theory on the brain as being some kind of Chern-Simons theory with some odd and some even directions, and where the supersymmetries have a simple expression. So what I'd like to do next is relate that way of looking at the supersymmetries to these expressions we're finding here. So the holomorphic twist of the theory on the D3 brain is holomorphic Chern-Simons on C2/3, and the supersymmetries are del epsilon I and epsilon I del ZJ. So we see the same kind of thing appearing. Sorry, I should call this W to be consistent. Epsilon I del WJ, that transforms in the same representation of SL2 times SL3 as this guy. And these D by D epsilons transform in the same representation as these Zs. So, well, can we check? I mean, so we'd like to be able to see at maybe a more detailed level why these expressions match up. So what we'll find is, so a closed string state will give a single trace deformation of the theory on the brain. Because we can look at the following amplitude, we can consider disk amplitudes with a closed string state, some number of open string states in the boundary, This will give some first order deformation, which involves only one trace of the theory on the brain. Now, a little algebra might convince you that the only ways of deforming the theory on the brain I'm going to have a slight detour into algebra. So, deformations of the theory on the brain. Remember, the theory on the brain, which is built from the differential graded algebra are such deformations are, well, they're really given by ways of deforming this algebra. So their Hochschild cohomology So what we'd like to do is relate these Hochschild cohomology groups with the Pauli vector fields on C5. So I'm going to try and make it more concrete in a second. So how do we compute these Hochschild cohomology groups? Well, firstly, we might as well replace the Dalbeau complex just by holomorphic functions on C2 or by polynomials. And Hochschild cohomology factorizes nicely for a tensor product of algebras, becomes a tensor product. So it's the Hochschild cohomology of C2 tensor, the Hochschild cohomology of the exterior algebra on free generators. So functions on C2. Now, Hochschild cohomology of functions on C2, this is just Pauli vector fields on C2. Now, there's a similarly Hochschild cohomology of this exterior algebra. It turns out that the same formula works, except we have to reverse the parity. Instead of this guy being odd, this is even. Sorry, is this making sense to people? Yeah. Now, in order to compute what this does, we're going to use the fact that Hochschild cohomology is invariant under Kozul duality. The Kozul dual of this exterior algebra is a symmetric algebra. So there's a canonical isomorphism, kind of like a Fourier transform between their Hochschild cohomology groups. Now, if we write out explicitly what the isomorphism is, you know, we know by the Hochschild-Kostin-Rosenberg theorem how to describe these groups. So we get an isomorphism like this, and it behaves exactly like a Fourier transform. It sends del zi to epsilon I on epsilon I, sorry, del epsilon I to zi. So with this in hand, we now know how to say take a closed string field and produce a Hochschild cohomology class and therefore a deformation of the theory on the brain. It's a little, the argument was a little involved, but what it amounts to is we take something in here, we use this isomorphism to think of it as something built from the epsilons, and then we think about what deformation of the algebra C2/3 that gives us. And we go through all these steps pretty explicitly, and we can calculate. Yeah?
In this case, I guess because we're considering one brain, this theory is kind of abelian, and all the data is kind of just an algebra?
No, the fact that it's just an algebra, I mean, this DG algebra knows about the theories for GLN for all n, because I can tensor it with GLN. Get another DG algebra and then build it.
I might imagine for the non-abelian case that I would expect the deformations to maybe correspond to deformations of the DGA. So is there a result relating, like by what you just said, the deformations of the...
Well, yes. I mean, Hochschild cohomology is Morita invariant. And tensoring with GLN, since GLN is Morita equivalent to C, has no effect. I mean, all we're saying, the Hochschild cohomology of a tensor product is a tensor product of the Hochschild cohomology groups. The Hochschild cohomology of GLN is trivial.
I don't know if it can really parse, like what categories are the objects in the statement thing?
Well, if I have two DG algebras A and B, the Hochschild cohomology of A tensor B is a tensor product. Hochschild cohomologies of A and B.
You're thinking of doing this for co-chains on...
No.
I wanted to consider this with GLN.
I just meant the... So that statement was a statement about DG, just DG algebras.
Okay.
Now I take the, now I treat GLN as a DG algebra. I tensor this guy with GLN and another DG algebra.
Oh, remembering the full associated algebra structure, not just...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if I wanted to, this because we're using Hochschild cohomology, this is really about GLN for all n, because if I wanted to think about deformations of the theory for a fixed n, I would be thinking about, as you said, the Chevalley cohomology of GLN to answer this. That's actually a much harder computation. In fact, the answer is not known.
So the space of deformations you're computing is the universal and n deformations.
Yeah.
It could even be that there are some
special
extra deformations.
Yes. That there will be special extra deformations, or some deformations will become the same for a fix for some particular values of n. But okay, so let's just check that everything matches up, that there are two ways of computing the supersymmetry on a D2 brain matchup. So here these coordinates are wi and the normal direction is zi. From the point of view of string theory of type 2b, we found that the supersymmetries were del wi wedge del zj or zj. Now, if we apply a rule, zj goes to d by d epsilon j. Del zj goes to epsilon j, this kind of Fourier transform rule, then this goes to epsilon j del zi, or del wi, and del and this is, these are precisely the symmetries of C2/3. Which come from supersymmetry of n equals 4 Young nulls. So maybe one more minute. So there's like various favorite things people might like to do with n equals 4 Young nulls, like you could write down the Kapustin-Witten twist, and here it's some expression in these supersymmetries, and we can see how to write it down in terms of supersymmetries of type 2b as well, as an example. So if you read Phil's papers, the Kapustin-Witten twist comes from the family of supercharges say lambda d by d epsilon 3 plus mu times epsilon 1 del z 1 So if you allow yourself to use the OR symmetry, which is the SL3 rotating these guys, you can scale lambda and mu by using an element of the Cartan of SL3 to make these lambda and mu part of a P1, which is what Kapustin-Witten said. So in terms of type 2b on C2 times C3, sorry, let me call this W again, sorry. So lambda times Z3 plus mu times so we make some directions non-commutative and have this funny linear superpotential. And there, you know, you can derive some fun things with this, but I mean, I suppose as it is, it's not that informative. Yeah, any questions?
I wanted to ask maybe if you could say a bit more about this sort of deformation of formation of the area on the brain coming from the bloodstream state.
Mm-hmm.
Some idea like you could imagine integrating out the closed stream states and seeing the deformation of the naive theory on the brain, so maybe it's not communicative experience.
Well, so the picture is so like I have my brain. And the tree level action for the theory on the brain comes from thinking about open strings ending on it. With some points in the boundary. So, like just like in the Fekaya category, for example, these give you the A infinity structure of the X algebra of them. Or in the B model, they also give you the A infinity structure of the X algebra. And like that A infinity structure is what you use to write down the action, because the action is just built from that by some simple formula. So now suppose I change the For example, suppose I change the complex structure of my Calabi-Yau. Suppose I make my Calabi-Yau non-commutative, or do something like that, which involves sticking in a Hochschild cohomology class.
Calabi-Yau is C5.
Yes, in this case. So then, to first order, I would add on a term, I mean that first order deformation is a closed string state. I would add on a term given by counting disk amplitudes with one state in the middle, and a bunch of states in the boundary. So it's a first order deformation of my A infinity structure, where my usual A infinity structure, which looks like this, is I have a first order term by first order deformation. And this diagram, this disk with one guy in the middle, is interpreted algebraically as the isomorphism between closed string states and deformations of the category given by open strings. Like if you want to be like really concrete about it, like a good example would be to think about the field theory on the world sheet. It's basically the Poisson for the B model. It's basically the Poisson signal model, and you can really concretely write down some closed string state, which is some polyvector field, and a bunch of open string things in the boundary. And write down bulk to boundary propagators and compute the deformation. And this is what Kontsevich did in his paper on deformation quantization. So it's a really kind of this first order expression you can make totally concrete by just explicit computations.
So the kind of baby version of identification, I think, is essentially what you mean, you know, these are asking this state, stuff like so, like, without the epsilon, just this first guy, like, is there a way to do the boundary theory calculation with the BD description of the B model and sort of produce this space of like, the field theory description for the theory on the brain?
Yes. So you would take, so, like, for C2 inside of C5, like the B model involves maps to C5 plus second copy of C5, the fermionic. It's really the dual. And if I have a copy of C2 here, the boundary condition, well, on this part I land in C2, and then on the other part I land in the complementary C3. Then you look at the boundary operators, two bosonic, three fermionic variables, I find that.
Maybe the second part is what I wasn't. I kind of thought of it and thought I couldn't see it. My answer was that I didn't know how to do it.
Why is this this the right space?
Rather the pi c twice. Maybe it's kind of like the obvious complement if you're like Lagrangian.
Yeah, that's right. It's really the only thing you can do if you want a Lagrangian. So like this, the space of fields looks like this. And the symplectic structure comes from, there's an odd symplectic form here. We integrated over two. It's like an AKSC theory. Mm-hmm. So now I need a Lagrangian in this odd symplectic manifold. Yeah, because the cohomology forms, yeah, and then the OPE, there's no quantum corrections to the OPE, but if you stuck in a bulk operator, like a bivector, you would find that the boundary operators don't commute anymore because of these, you know, bulk boundary propagators. And that's my bulk operator. You can...
And so in your you know the answer if you kind of take the coherent sum over all possible numbers of insertions and all orders in epsilon here? Like what the theory on the D? Yeah.
Well, that's. I mean, that coherent sum is what Kontsevich does, right? And.
Sure, and then it corresponds to deformation quantization here, so.
I mean, like depending on what polyvector field you put in. I mean, if you stuck in some generic polyvector field, it's essentially uncomputable because it's, you know, Kontsevich's formality formula is just a crazy thing.
I see. So there's it's not that there's like a canonical deformation of the theories on the brains coming from the whole closed string spectrum or something. It's that for certain closed string states, like there's
No, there is, but it's just very hard to understand the all order deformation. So Kontsevich's formality theorem says that Hochschild cohomology is isomorphic to polyvector fields as a Lie algebra. As a homotopy Lie algebra. But that isomorphism is really, really complicated. So if you give me a polyvector field satisfying the Morikartan equation, you can lift it to a Hochschild cochain satisfying the Morikartan equation, but it's a very complicated formula. And then that formula gives you the deformation. But
and that's what's really doing this by the
diagrammatics. Yes, yeah.
You're sort of like a slicker form of it. Asking for that is like asking for some really sort of like nice explicit formula for this.
Yes, yeah. Except, but you know, that's right. But if you give me some like very simple polyvector field, then the thing you find will truncate after some small number of steps. Like if it's constant coefficient, then you have no problems. Ooh.